Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Weed Day Wednesday, Tucson, Arizona's number one online radio podcast about all things medical cannabis. Your host, Bellstar,
and the Cannabis Kid. Our show features news, interviews, and all the latest information about anything and everything medical cannabis related in Tucson, Arizona,
and the world at large.
We'd love to hear from you. Please give us a call, 646-915-8421. Email thctucson@gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook, visit us on MySpace, or tweet with us on Twitter.
Our sponsors for Weed Day Wednesday are Growers House, Accurate Med Testing, EasyMarijuana.com, and Culture Magazine.
We would like to thank Tumbleweed Health Center and Studio C for hosting our show every week, along with the lowest price certifications in town. You'll find hemp products, accessories, and all things educationally related to medical cannabis.
Visit Tumbleweed Health Center at 5315 East Broadway Boulevard or online at tumbleweedhealthcenter.com.
And remember,
be smart, be safe, and educate.
All right. Good Welcome morning. To Weed Day Wednesday. How's it going?
I'm doing well, Belle. How are you doing?
Woo! I'm excited for today.
We've got a big show.
Oh, my gosh. We have a
really
huge
show
today. Huge. Gargantuan. It's March 5th, 2014, and we've been doing this for 2 years now.
Woo!
Boy, howdy. All right. On. That's awesome. Looks like we got some good levels over there. We got a little sound in the background. It's always a little frightening when you hook up your big mic, you know, for the big
shows.
The good
stuff.
Yeah, the good stuff.
Bringing in the stars.
Bringing in the stars, totally. This is a very exciting show. You can call in if you would like to call in and chat with the stars, blog with the stars, 646-915-8421. And you can also blog in if you would like to go the route of the internet. Go to tumbleweedshealthcenter.com and click on the radio link. First picture that comes up is our little Weed Day logo. Just click that. It'll take you right to the show. And then you can listen right there. Listen in on your cell phone, your home phone, that old-fashioned dial-up, you know, with the rotaries.
Right.
You could even rotary this, I bet.
I bet you could. That's one. Right. Be online.
Well, yeah, you'd never get on.
Also,
anyway.
A lot of our information that we're going to be sharing today on the radio show is going to be on Facebook and the Tumbleweed Health Center website.
Yes.
It'll fall into
the
category of what it is, whether it's science, health, recipes. It'll file under one of those. So.
Yeah, check it out. Also, we would like to just give a quick shout out to some of our sponsors today, azmarijuana.com. Culture Magazine.
We've got
Blog Talk Radio.
Studio C.
Growers House.
You
gotta have Growers House.
Yeah.
We're not growing. We just don't have anything to talk about here, do we, folks? We love to grow. Yes. Awesome. I can't believe. Seriously, I'm in shock right
Two
now.
Years.
I'm excited. I'm nervous.
No, I didn't start off the show with you guys, but these last about.
Yeah. How long you've been?
I think
how
I've
long
been
you've
here
been
about
stuck with
a year
us?
And a half.
Something like that. Yeah, you
close
came on
to, a little,
close to the beginning there.
Over a little over a year, I think, is what it is.
It's been an exciting couple
it has,
of years.
We've
Holy
gotten,
cow, just
we've
even
had so
in,
many great guests on.
Oh, you know what? That's a good point. I was thinking about, you know, just doing shout-outs. So
right. Of all the guests that we've had in the last few years, because not all of them. If we could have had them all on today, we would.
Holy cow. Let's just tell them what's coming up today. And then we'll tell them who's been on, because the list that people have been on is just gargantuan. It would take us a whole show to read it. So this morning we've got, I'm really excited about Cheryl Schumann. I've been bugging her for a long time since I saw her on The View. This lady is extraordinary, not only in the cannabis community, but just in the community at large. You know, she does marketing PR and works with all sorts of folks in the industry. We've got Attorney Tom Dean, a fantastic attorney for Arizona. He's known as Dismissal Dean. He's going to get your case dismissed for you. We're hoping to hear from Dr. Robert Melamed. This important doctor in our industry is helping to share science with us in a way that, you know, the government can access it, because, you know, all we ever hear is, We don't have any scientific facts. We don't have anything to back us up.
He also puts it in a way that people can understand it.
Yes.
And I think that's the most important part about getting this message across, is that people understand the medical side of this.
Absolutely. Health for our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
We've got author Doug Fine.
Oh, one of my favorites.
Yes, we're hoping he calls in. He's at the airport right now. Hi, Dougie. We're hoping you get a chance to call in between airport people and security. don't bring your goats through security. I don't think they'd let them on. Service goats. Do they have such a thing? Service goats. I guess you could
register your
goat. I don't
know how well they would actually...
I don't know. And...
it's our idea.
Robert Platshorn. Spokesperson extraordinaire. This guy is a show in and of himself. So, and he loves to be called so.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, those are the...
Getting the message out to the seniors.
Those are the folks that are coming. Yes, he is. Thankfully, he's healthy, and I think the government gave him the go-ahead to...
Does he get to leave?
I think he gets to leave Florida.
We'll
talk to him, yeah, because that's not a good thing when you don't get to leave and do your show. You know what? We've had a good friend of Robert's on, Urban Rosenfeld, Doug Banfelder, Brave Michaela,
mm-hmm.
who's, 9 years old now,
yeah.
fighting cancer, Michael Bowman, who helped get our hemp flag flown this year at the state capitol last year for the 4th of July. Yeah, that's fantastic. That was amazing.
Well, it's coming back.
Yeah.
That's the word.
It is coming back. I bet every year from now on they're going to fly a hemp flag. I'm going to put some dough down on that one. Dr. Beth Fisher, Regina Nelson, Project CBD, AZ Med Testing, the King of Pot, who sadly passed away last year. Right. Or was it this
We lost
this
him back in October.
October?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very sad to hear. Great guest. Great guy. Bill Boudreau. AZ for Normal, our local chapter of Normal. Watermelon Girl.
She's great.
Oh,
she's
my gosh.
She's coming out with some really great recipes.
Yeah, and she sent us some cards, Watermelon Girl. Thank you for those. Those are awesome. Send the rest. We know there's like 8 more in that series. You got to send more. We've had Accurate Med Testing, Desert Med Testing, Marijuana Policy Project, Students for Sensible Drug Policy, and a million more, 2 years worth of amazing guests. And just incredible stories of how this plant has helped so many people and has, you know, we know, we've been reading the history of the plant, you know, 5,000-10,000 years back. And it really is an incredible, incredible plant that really never should have been labeled and scheduled and criminalized as it has.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I was reading an article back in South Africa that they have a lot of information. They're going through the same kind of things that America is going through, you know, trying to fight for this plant right now. And they've got a great history video that talks about how cannabis actually came over to South Africa and how it just became part of their culture. And, and it's not was just smoking. People were eating it raw.
Right.
I mean, it was a raw plant. It was medicinal in every way without any side effects and was just, one of nature's, they call it God-bearing fruit.
Yes,
so,
and used for so many things. And Mr. Doug Fine is on the line. He's going to tell us what these so many things are. All right.
Good morning, Doug.
Hi, Doug.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're doing great.
We're good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah,
we can. Yeah, that's awesome. Are you at the airport?
I am cruising in the vegetable aisle mobile to the airport.
Awesome.
On a beautiful morning in the land of enchantment.
Nice.
We love the vegetable oil mobile. Oh, my goodness. That's great. Did you hear that the land of enchantment just passed 2 new ailments for your state? Parkinson's and Huntington's just passed as part of the health ailments.
No, I did not know that. That's important news. And the other thing is we have legalization moving to the legislature.
Wow. Legalization to the legislature. Nice. That's incredible.
You guys might get it before we do.
You just might.
You know, this might be an appropriate way to celebrate 2 years. We've been hanging out and knowing each other and helping educate and learn. In those 2 years, the world has changed. It's like one day future generations will say, Also, how did you know cannabis was important right when it all became accepted? And we don't have answers for that, do we?
Well, we will.
We will. That's right. I think we will. I think we'll have a lot of answers. A lot of these questions that we're asking ourselves now, and well, just how much far the science is going.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
That's what excites me, is that there's actually science backing this plant up.
And look at all the states that are on the verge of legalizing right now. You know?
Yeah.
30 states, yeah.
Texas is heading there. It's unreal.
Texas, I know. We were laughing about that.
I had
imagine
a friend,
the size of the weed in Texas is going to be grown.
What they said. They said everything.
Everything's
big,
bigger,
and bigger in Texas.
Yes, boy. Yes, you know it.
So,
Mr. Doug Fine, tell us about your book, your hemp book.
So I'm really excited about this one. It's basically coming out pretty soon, in like less than 2 weeks, I think. I think it ships on March 20th, and it's called Hemp Bound.
Oh.
And it's another one of those. How could we have known about the timing? Because I've been researching it for several years. When I researched Too High to Fail, which was the book that brought us together, and
right.
We had so much fun in Tucson and on the radio show.
Yes. Miss him on
I
our couch.
And the energy component of the cannabis plant, how the stalks can be used for energy, was being underexploited. So that's why I started researching hemp, and it's like, everything your roommate with the lava lamp said about hemp is true. It's this amazing fiber,
awesome.
Amazing food. So I just kind of tried to write humorously about a two-year journey around the world, from Belgium to Hawaii to Manitoba, Canada, and talking about what this plant can do. And then wham, bang, last month, February 7th, President Obama signs the Farm Bill legalizing hemp research. Boom, we're on our way. Canada's already at a $1 billion industry, so it's a short, fun book. I've got Ray Nelson blurbed it. He called it a blueprint for the America of the future. That felt really nice. And,
wow.
Yeah, check it out. It's on sale everywhere, online or solid bookstore.
That is awesome.
That is awesome. And
so there's going to be a ton of information in your book that's just going to be really giving out the whole thing about hemp. And
too bad you're driving. You could have read us a little blurb from your book.
the key concept is the stalks, when you're done with everything else, make energy from the stalks. So like I was in Colorado last week. There was a big public meeting on the first day that Colorado was accepting commercial hemp cultivating applications. The state is going ahead no matter what federal law is. They're saying go for it commercially. And so I was there talking and certainly learning, and it was a historic experience and everything like that. But what I told the farmers was, right from the beginning, in your initial plans and in your initial budget, factor in the using the stalks for energy. There's a number of ways you can do it. You can do it for ethanol, or there's this cool anaerobic process that they do in Europe called gasification. It's very carbon friendly. They do with farm waste. So I'm telling farmers, build that generator, that plant, that energy independence into your hemp oil processing, into your fiber processing factory facility, so that the whole picture is there. No more utility bills.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yay. You know, because it's been there. It's always been
there. We now have the technology and the science that we can be able to start using this to our benefit.
That's fantastic.
Doug, with the Farm Bill happening, I wanted to know, because I know that here in Arizona, our legislation has shot it down. And in New Mexico, where are you guys at in the Farm Bill in New Mexico? How is that going to affect growing hemp and cannabis for patients?
I wasn't sure I totally heard the question. Were you saying how is hemp legislation going to affect growing cannabis?
Yes. I mean, with you guys, because it was shot down with us here.
Sorry, I'm just a little bit hard. You sound just a little bit too far away. you were saying that kind of legislation was shot down in Arizona?
Correct.
Yeah,
okay.
So how is New Mexico dealing with it, right?
Correct.
Specifically with hemp, I don't think New Mexico is not one of the 10 states that's addressed hemp yet. We do have some activists. I'm very out of touch with Santa Fe politics because I live so far south, and, you know, I'm raising kids both good and human. probably the least overtly political part of time of my life, but it's my job. I'm a cannabis journalist. I should know what's going on in my backyard. So I do pay attention to numerous channels, both activists and, like, drug policy groups and whatnot. And I know that there's action on full legalization this year. I'm not sure where it's at a committee, but it was a real thing that people are really doing. And I believe that hemp is not yet addressed, and the rumblings are just starting. It probably is going to follow federal law here. But the thing about hemp, I'm getting really educated on this now more and more. You can't grow hemp in the same areas that you grow psychoactive cannabis, because the hemp pollen will dilute the psychoactive cannabis. But you don't need huge distances. You don't need hundreds of miles. If everybody's growing outdoor and it's totally organic and stuff, you need like pretty 6 mile dip between is considered safe. But in Colorado, they don't have anything near those kind of distances. So what they're doing is putting filters over the psychoactive cannabis because the pollen's like 13 microns thick or 30 or something. And you can put filters that are 1 micron thick so none of the pollen will get through. So there's ways for hemp and cannabis to coexist agriculturally.
Wow.
Interesting. Very, very, very interesting. I know.
You never cease to amaze me, Doug. Never.
Hey, let me ask you a question.
I just learned that the other day at this hemp meeting in Boulder. Don't I sound like I'm like really an expert? I just learned it like 2 days ago.
You do. We're bowing right now.
You sounded really good.
Yeah, in fact, I'm going to ask you a question. You sounded so good. Answer me this. Riddle me this.
Riddle me this,
Dougie. With everybody focusing on the CBDs that are helping with seizures and cancers and, you know, tremors and shakes and things like that, do you think that it would be beneficial to have as high a level of CBD as you can, you know, like the Charlotte's Webs are 13-18% CBDs, but also have as high a level of THC as well? Because when you juice that or extract it somehow, you can do it non-psychoactively, but the benefits of THC are so incredible.
Let me give it two quick bullet point answers, and then I've got to bounce because I'm here at the airport and I'm a little bit late. But questions. So my two bullet points of things that I think it's important to think about in that question are, one, there's now more than 100 known cannabinoids, of which THC and CBD are just two, and the interplay of those, plus terpenoids, bioflavonoids, all that stuff, is crucial to study. So I would say that we're on the right track, but research is in its infancy, and to not limit our discussions to just two prominent cannabinoids, because there are so many. So that, as that's, you know, keep your research going. The second thing is, any herbalist will tell you that, excuse me, sorry about that, I hope you can hear me. Any herbalist will tell you that different herbs act differently for different people. And so, you know, a lot of it has to do with self-experimentation. Luckily, it's one of the safest plants known. So I got to bounce. I love you guys. Congratulations on your 2 years. Thank you for being so
much.
Safe
travels.
Yes. We'll see you later.
Yay. That was awesome. Thank you, Doug.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye, Doug.
Bye.
Oh, we love Doug. That's
sending
so great.
Sending him off. Have
hemp
fun.
Hemp-bound.
Where's he off to? Just somewhere?
He's out to talk about hemp-bound.
Yeah.
He's off to be...
a book signing or something.
Oh, author extraordinaire. He's fantastic. And you normally, Doug's sitting on our couch eating Chinese food, you know, enjoying some cannabis with us as we do our interviews. It's really fun and fantastic. It's odd not to have him here.
The goat farmer, he was talking about not being able to get into town as much as he wants to because he's a goat farmer.
Yeah, he farms his goats.
One
of which is named Taylor Swift. She's so cute. And they actually smile. He sends us emails with his smiling goats.
Oh,
it's really fantastic. Well, we are, oh my gosh, that was fantastic. Would you grab me the trivia box, please? We're going to do some trivia right now
today,
because we've got a minute.
So all you listeners out there,
before we inject Cheryl Schumann to
right now, we're going to go ahead and pull a card from the trivia box. Bell Star is going to...
This is for a presidential. If you're a patient in Arizona, anywhere in Arizona, this is for a presidential Grown with Love Lowrider Indica joint. Huge, gargantuan joint. So come down and get this. All right. This is silly. The product, this popular product, over-the-counter product, can clear your red eyes after smoking marijuana. Okay, we've got some hand raised. We need a harder one than that. We need a harder one.
I know.
That's, come on. Well, read them before you give them to Sissy. In what movie, here we go. In what movie did the characters Jay and Silent Bob make their big screen debut?
That's a good one.
You know it? I bet not. In what?
I do think I know it.
All right. In what movie did the characters Jay and Silent Bob make their big screen?
That's what I thought.
Okay. Here's a good one, too. Maybe this could be a street thing. What is what's the slang term for 1 pound of marijuana? A pound of marijuana.
Pound.
A pound,
pound
of marijuana. Hey, man, you got an elbow? Uh-huh. Sorry, I'm just going to give it to you. I had to tell you it was great. It's like the joke section we'll get to in a little bit.
It's called an elbow?
It's called an elbow.
Man.
That wasn't for...
That was,
that's old. That's got to be some seriously old school.
I would have never...
Old school trivia. I don't know.
Would have never.
I don't know. That was exciting. I can't wait to have Doug's book in here. We're going to have it for sale. So get on down to 5315 East Broadway Boulevard, Suite 103. We're in the back. TumbleweedsHealthCenter.com. And Cheryl Schumann has been patiently waiting on the line here. And like I said, we've been really excited to get her on. We're going to read her bio here she sent to us. You can check out her webpage, too. We'll get to that as well. So we've got Cheryl Schumann. It says, is no stranger in front of the camera. At the age of 3, she made her first television appearance as the focus of Christmas in Appalachia with Charles Carroll. The series profiled the vast differences between the rich and poor throughout America and specifically focused on the endless cycle of poverty in a small Appalachian farming town. Her entrepreneurial spirit started to shine through at the young age of 6 when she started her own puppy breeding business and from there assisted her grandmother in providing maid service and also worked the family farm. By age 12, Cheryl had blossomed as a beauty on top of her determination and within a few years was competing in a variety of beauty pageants. Cheryl's first big chance to shine happened when she was a teenager at age 17. She created a coupon and refunding system. Her hometown newspaper wrote an article with a headline that read, America's Coupon Queen buys $167 worth of groceries for 16 cents. The AP and UPI Wire Services, Star Magazine, and many others picked up the story. Overnight, she became a huge sensation with the first article leading to several television appearances. The Bob Braun Show at WLWT-TV in Cincinnati offered her a twice-weekly regular appearance to share her money-saving tips with the audience. She was also offered a national thrice-weekly segment for Group W Productions of PM Magazine, the number one rated syndicated show at the time, playing in 125 media markets. Cheryl went from being a poor child of the Appalachians to a television star, making her first million by the time she was 21 years old.
A life-changing car accident at the age of 23 forced Cheryl to reassess her life plan and seeing the limitations of Ohio and realize that she needed to broaden her horizons and take it to the next step, including relocating to California, putting her education as an optician to work. Cheryl quickly found a job working for an optical retailer in Encino, and just fast met Michael Jackson and became his personal optician by offering to make a house call. That first house call led to a new business named Starry Eyes. With 3 years, reached revenues of $22 million, working on the biggest films, TVs, and properties in Hollywood. Schumann has worked with Tom Cruise, Julia Roberts, Johnny Depp, Steven Tyler, Jennifer Lopez, and many other A-list stars. Her expertise has led her regular appearances on The Today Show, Access Hollywood, and Entertainment Tonight.
In 2006, Schumann was diagnosed with cancer. After years of unsuccessful impangled surgeries and chemotherapy and radiation, Cheryl opted for endocannabinoid medicine as an alternative and used the raw juice and oils from the medicine from the medical cannabis plant to save her life. The publicly generated from her personal battle led to her appointment as the executive director of the Beverly Hills Cannabis Club and also as an activist, where she became the most visible woman in the medical marijuana reform movement. She learned to grow her own medicine on her California farm. And let's just talk with Cheryl. We'll post this. This goes on for a while, but we'd rather just talk with Cheryl. Cheryl, are you with us this morning?
Good morning.
I am. I was just thinking I need to shorten my bio.
Well, it's fantastic. It's just long. It's wonderful. Sure. We could talk for hours, I'm sure.
Wow.
Well, it's so nice to finally meet you guys. I know we've been trying to get together for a while here, and I love Arizona. It's a beautiful state.
Oh, well, you are welcome to come to Tumbleweeds anytime and visit and share our medicine with us. It's been a long time since we saw you on The View.
Yes.
Tell us about the experience. And are you there? Oh, maybe we cut out a minute.
Yeah, you cut out for a minute.
Well, sorry about that. Yeah.
The View was incredible. It was interesting. I got the call right after we did a BBC piece, and when I heard that Barbara Walters wanted to interview us, I mean, the first thing is I got scared.
Yeah.
Barbara Walters. But it was great. I have to say, one of the things that I'm noticing more and more with the media that we do is, I'd say 99.9% of the producers and the camera people and the sound people, they're all cannabis friendly. And I'll never forget when we went to do The View in New York. The producer took me aside and said, look, I just really want you to do a good job, and here's a heads up on some of the questions, and I just want you to be prepared. And, you know, a lot of times they don't give you the questions in advance, and I just thought, you know, it was really cool when the producer told me, you know, Barbara Walters is going to be interviewing you herself. I just thought it was really cool because they were like secretly rooting for us. And when we went on stage, you could see some of the producers behind the scenes. They're like, yeah, go, you go, you know, and like, great. But that was really nice. It was intimidating, but I think it was good. And, you know, I mean, as you guys know, because you're part of the media as well, the more we get the message out, the more we talk about it, the more cannabis becomes a part of everyday conversation, that's when we start to change the course of public opinion.
Oh, that's absolutely the truth. And I have to say that there was a comment you made to Barbara. She said, and I didn't understand why she said this, being such an educated woman, but she called people that use cannabis dope smokers. And what you said, which I thought this was brilliant, Cheryl came back and said, well, I consume cannabis. And I thought that was great because there are so many ways you can consume cannabis. And then you brought out your vaporizer and showed her that you weren't smoking dope.
Right.
But I just thought that was funny she said that, but your response was awesome. That was really great.
Thank you. I mean, to me, I'll never forget seeing the look on her face because she looked over and she put her hand on my knee, and it was all live, of course. She said, I'm so sorry, dear. You're the last person on earth I would expect to be a pothead. I just smiled, and I was like, okay, this is going to be fun. But I think what she says, though, has a lot of validity because you had opened up the show by saying that cannabis is this plant, basically, that had a bad reputation. And that's kind of sort of what our entire media campaign has been about. When you look at, you know, the cannabis plant, this is a plant that was on our pharmacy shelves until the 1930s, and then along comes Reefer Madness. And based on lies, this poor little plant, who did nothing wrong, became demonized. So when I decided to come out of the closet about my own cannabis consumption, I felt that it was really, really important to basically start a rebranding campaign and get the truth out and have people speak up for the plant. And, you know, as I said earlier, I think this media campaign has been very, very successful because up until 2 years ago when we first started doing mainstream media, it was very unusual to see a mainstream person or personality
to be on camera and speaking positively about cannabis. Usually, coverage on cannabis in and of itself at that point was on VHO extraction explosions, arrests.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I mean, yeah. And now it's very, very normal to see the topic of conversation come up, whether it be through CBD and the science behind CBD, where Dr. Sanjay Gupta came out last year about, you know, Charlotte's Web and some other great CBD-based medicine. But it's changing every single day, and I think that the general public is very hungry for this kind of education.
I think you're right, and I'm really excited to start seeing it change in the school systems. I just remember when we were little, you know, you had to sign permission slips to talk about sex and drugs and stuff, and I just wonder what they're going to put in the books about cannabis.
Exactly.
It is historical, and Cheryl's right. It was in all the pharmacies and up in the pharmacopoeia up until the late 1930s, you know. So it's been a medicine longer than it hasn't, a lot longer than it hasn't.
And for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. So where are you? You're in California right now, correct? In L.A.?
Yes, we're in Beverly Hills. I just woke up not long ago, and not a morning person. But
well, thanks for being with
us
this morning.
You're doing great for not being a morning person.
An hour earlier.
Yeah, it's a lot. California's getting ready to vote on legalization again. Am I correct?
Well, you know something, there were four initiatives that were trying to get on the ballot, and sadly, three of them have already kind of collapsed and dropped out. But the problem has been in California, it's a very diverse state, and in many ways, Northern California and Southern California are almost like two different states in and of themselves. So sadly, it's going to be a very difficult process. There's one initiative that's still hanging in there and fighting to find funding and get enough signatures. But it's not looking good right now for us to make the 2014 ballot. So I think everyone's kind of regrouping, focusing on 2016. And as you know, everyone's looking at Colorado as the great American experiment when it comes to cannabis. And but I think we're on our way. I mean, when you see the momentum that we have, I mean, California, we're going to make it. But right now, California is still, we're still trying to find our way.
Wow, Cheryl. That's really great. What are some of the, I know that you say that you've been consuming cannabis for, how long have you been consuming cannabis?
I first started using cannabis back in 1996. I was going through a really bad divorce, and my therapist, a medical doctor, had recommended cannabis actually over antidepressants and anti-anxiety medicines back in the day. And my therapist at the time was using it himself and had his own garden. So when I heard my doctor, my medical doctor, literally tell me that cannabis worked as a better and far superior mood stabilizer for him than any pharmaceuticals, that's when I tried it and it worked for me. So I started using it as a mood stabilizer first, and then fast forward to 2016, I was diagnosed with cancer. So I used, you know, a juicing treatment. I used the, you know, Rick Simpson oil treatment. I used cannabis that's high in CBDs, but I also used THC and started infusing it in my food. So there's a number of different ways that I use it. So I personally love the plant, and I'm very, very confident that without this plant I would not be here today, nor would I have the quality of life that I do.
Wow.
That's Cheryl, incredible. What's one of your favorite recipes that you use at home?
You know, one of my favorites is actually cooking with cannabis. I have a couple of different chefs that cook for us when we do our cannabis tastings. So for me, because I still have digestive issues, I love cooking with some of the favorite recipes from different restaurants that I used to go to. So, for example, chicken piccata is one of my favorite dishes. So the chef from La Dolce Vita started cooking it for me, so I get the great taste of the food, but I also have healing benefits of the cannabis, which is in the food. So that's one of my favorites. But I'm very excited to say we just hired a new chef. Her name is Chef Chanel, and she was trained in Paris with the Cordon Bleu. And we've taken some of the best recipes from some of the most famous chefs in the world. And we're doing a lot more cannabis tastings where we actually pair the cannabis strains similar to the way they do wine tastings up in the Napa Valley. But we pair the cannabis strains with the food, so you can have the gourmet flavors of the food matched to the cannabis, and it's really delicious.
It's absolutely
and
amazing.
What time's dinner? We can make it there. It's 8:30. We're on our way. As soon as the show's over.
Right now, it's interesting. We've been doing a lot of mansion parties because for our collective here, my personal collective is the Beverly Hills Cannabis Club, and
yes.
Our plan is to expand the concept from the mansion dinner parties to other cities. So we have expansion plans for 10 new facilities throughout the entire country by 2016. So at some point very soon, there will be these fine dining establishments where you can also vaporize. And so anyone who's a legal patient or, either in their respective states can be able to come. But I really miss, that fine dining experience of being able to sit down and have a meal in a nice restaurant with my family and friends, be able to use my cannabis or eat with cannabis and not have any kind of hassle. So my mission is to make that as common as going to any other fine dining establishment.
That's really awesome. How are you going to deal with state laws and DUIs and things like that? Because you mentioned that they could come in and vaporize. Does that mean they can't come in and hit a bong or smoke a joint or eat a cookie and leave?
Well, what we're doing with our guests, we always provide limo service because we don't want the liability of someone, getting into a car and driving under the influence. As you know, that edible or that food will kick in about an hour. So we always provide limousine service for our guests. So it's going to be different for every outlet, but that's one of the reasons we're saying, this expansion process is going to be throughout 2016. Because as you know, every single day the laws are changing and evolving and all that sort of thing. So the good thing is with the investors and so forth that we're working with, to do these build-outs are going to take a year or two anyway, so we're planning for the future now and building the brand now because it's really about building the brand, and then the brands that are successful in the future, those are the ones that become the household name.
Yeah.
And how are you doing that? How are you making cannabis a household name in such a way that you're steering away from reefer madness?
Well, the top thing that we're doing is we launched a full-on media campaign. My daughter Amy and I, Amy's my business partner and executive vice president, we started a media campaign, and I'm very proud to say that in the past 6 months we've been on literally 27 different national and international media outlets, not just The View, but also on Vista and ABC's Good Morning America, Pierce Morgan's Gone to Pot Special, ABC's 2020, and just a number of different TV shows. We generated over 100 million audience views literally during that period of time. So to me, it's really about a rebranding campaign and focusing on the media. Now, that being said, we signed a development deal for our own TV show as well with William Morris Endeavor, which is in production right now. So it's my hope with this TV show that is going to be focused on cannabis but also on the mother-daughter team with my daughter and myself as we're building this company. So what we're showing to, the mass public is here's a mother-daughter team, mother-daughter just like any other mother and daughter. They just happen to work in the cannabis industry, and you're going to witness the birth of a whole new community, a whole new industry as cannabis starts becoming legitimized. So that's what we're doing. And then the cast of characters and people that we meet along the way who are building their companies and their own individual stories and the patients. And, it's kind of a convergence between mainstream and pop culture to the cannabis community. And so far with a lot of the cannabis-related shows, the ones in the past have been predominantly male-dominated. This will be the first cannabis show that's going to be female-dominated, and women are the ones who dominate all of the purchasing on TV. So if you can hit that golden demographic of women between the ages of 18 to 54, generally you have a hit because it's that audience that buys the advertising and whatnot on shows. So it's looking really, really good. And I'm very, very excited to have women be leading the way, just like Pauline Sabin did with her little ladies that did lunch. Pauline Sabin organized a group of society women back in the 30s and is credited with overcoming alcohol prohibition. So when you consider the fact we're witnessing the beginning to the end of cannabis prohibition, it's huge.
Wow, Cheryl, that's so awesome.
That is huge.
You'll have to come down here and visit Tumbleweeds.
Yeah, Tumbleweeds is an all-women-run health center, and just that's great because, you know, it's funny. I get High Times magazine here, many of us do, and seriously, 99% of the articles and the covers and everything done are by men, and I know there are a lot of wonderful women like yourself out there growing incredible medicine, and we need more of them out there. Reach. We have a lot of good things to say.
So awesome.
Well, I think also one of the interesting things I think is you know, we're really becoming more and more mainstream every day, and I know some people, because I'm an outsider.
Yeah.
I don't fit the stereotypical image of what a cannabis consumer looks like, but the person The person I'm really trying to reach, quite frankly, is the woman or the corporate person who's still in the closet. You know, we've been preaching to the cannabis community for a long, long time, and we're so blessed because the cannabis community loves cannabis. They're behind us. They want us to succeed. That's great. And I remember, you know, speaking in front of hundreds of thousands of people at Seattle Hemp Fest. It's all great. But the person we really need to reach is the woman who's sneaking in her bathroom, taking a little hit of a joint, blowing it out the bathroom window because she's embarrassed, ashamed, or feels guilt about using cannabis. And that's the person I want to reach. I want to let them know, not only is it okay for you to use cannabis, you're making a healthier choice to use cannabis than you are over pharmaceuticals or tobacco or alcohol. And I want to be able to empower those women and men all across the country to come out of the closet and be loud and be proud, and let's change these laws. You know, we don't have to feel shame. We don't have to feel guilt. We are choosing a healthier alternative. So I want to get to those women and those men and get them to start talking, get them to come out of the closet, talk to their family, talk to their employers, talk to their neighbors. And that's how we influence social change, is literally by starting a revolution. And thank God with social media and technology today, we can start that social revolution. And we're already doing it. We're well on our way. And this is a freight train, as you guys know. We have so much momentum. No one's going to stop us now. And I know that I, for one, will never stop until we see full legalization for responsible adult use for everyone that wants to choose cannabis.
Oh, that's
so
awesome.
Awesome.
Yeah,
Cheryl.
Thank you. Thanks for driving that freight train.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that.
You just said something that sparked a question for me, adult use. So there are a lot of people, there's an organization here in Arizona that wants it on the ballot for 2014, and they feel that an adult is somebody who's 18 and over, someone who's able to go to war and vote for their country. If they fight for their country, why can't they have
cannabis.
So what do you say about that? I mean,
define adult
or define the age at which you think a person, and I know this is going to vary, but what age do you think a person is responsible enough to make that decision? Because cannabis can be psychoactive.
Right.
Talk to us about that.
Well, for me, it's a two-part question because, as you know, there are a lot of pediatric oncology patients that are, you know, I've worked with children as young as baby Dahlia who has brain cancer who just turned 3 years old. Obviously, she is a legitimate brain cancer patient. So there are obviously cases where there are underage children that need cannabis. And so I believe that with a doctor's prescription or a doctor's referral or under a supervised doctor's care, that pediatric patients, whether they are cancer patients or patients who have Dravet syndrome or severe forms of epilepsy, when you consider the fact that you can see that their tremors and their seizures are completely eliminated in some cases by using cannabis, it's a no-brainer. So I think that there has to be legislation in place that allows for children who are legitimate patients in need that can get it. So there's, it's a two-sided question. So for children in special cases, I think they absolutely have to be included. But when you look at states that are legalizing for recreational use or responsible adult use, like Washington and Colorado, I do have to say that I'm also a firm believer that on the recreational side, or as we call the responsible adult use side, it's a no-brainer. Cannabis is a safer alternative to alcohol, tobacco, or pharmaceuticals. So I'm inclined to agree that if you are old enough to go to war to get a driver's license, then you should be old enough to make that decision. And, of course, every legislative piece of writing has its own merit. You have to judge on each merit. But I'm a firm believer that cannabis should be able to be consumed, if so chosen, as a responsible adult choice to those other drugs, alcohol or tobacco. But also in the case of some young children and pediatric patients, I think it should also be legal for them.
Excellent. I think I agree. There's still, you know, some people are still really young at 18, but most people, I think, could handle that. And if they did need supervision from their doctors or guardians or parents, then, you know, that should be an option too. But it's also about personal choice, I feel. I really don't feel that the government has any say in my medical history or my medical well-being. You know, I don't think that they can tell me that I can't do something that makes me feel better and has no side effects.
I tend to be a little bit liberal on other issues. Like, my philosophy is really my body, my choice, and I'm, I have to say whether it's being gay and choosing who we can or can't love. You know, I feel that we should be able to allow to have that choice. So I equate the cannabis movement very similar to the LGBT movement in that it's similar in that it's coming out of the closet. It's a lifestyle choice, my body, my choice, what medicine I choose to use for my body, the person I choose to love. Same thing with, like, pro-abortion choices. I mean, there's so many similarities because it's a personal freedom issue, and the government shouldn't have any right to tell us what to do with those personal freedoms.
That's true.
Especially if you're not hurting anybody else.
Well, they don't know me.
Exactly.
They don't know my body. Yeah.
Cheryl, I know that the cannabis concentrates are really in the movement in California.
Yeah.
The waxes, the dabs,
the oils,
and things like that. Where are you at on all of how that's all being worked up in California?
Or around?
Well, I think it's all in the delivery system. Honestly, I mean, I have a very opinionated view of hashes and concentrates and all that. I mean, look, there's no question that some of these concentrates are better for pain relief. And when you have chronic pain issues, sometimes it's better to use a heavier concentrate. My issue, quite frankly, is the delivery system and what's acceptable. I mean, for me, as a corporate woman, it's difficult for me to see the dabbing and the torches and all that when you can get the same effect medicinally from using a vaporizer that's a little more discreet. Now, some people don't like me because of that opinion, but that is my opinion. I do believe that the torches and all of that, I think for a mainstream audience or for a modern mainstream consumer, just a normal person out on the street, if they see someone who's dabbing, using a torch and a rig and keeping that around in their backpack, that's a scary visual for a
mainstream. I might not understand.
I agree.
No, it's medicine.
Yeah. Wait, what are you doing?
Because especially keep in mind, we're coming off of hit series like Breaking Bad, which glorifies meth use. So for a lay person out in the viewing audience, they're not educated enough to know that, oh, it's just the concentrate of cannabis. In their mind, the first thing they do is they start to freak out, like, oh, my God, honey, come look, they're doing drugs. There's a torch and everything on TV. That's what a mainstream person, because it's scary to them. Now, again, I don't make the rules, and it's not just me saying this. This is a proven fact. That image is scary to people. So to me, great. You want to dab, just be a little bit more discreet. In a way, it's like, you know, the gay and lesbian lifestyle. You know, people in mainstream, they may support gay marriage, but that doesn't mean that they have to watch homosexual sex on their TV at home. It's like what you do in the privacy of your home is fine. But sometimes you don't have to throw it in people's faces. So for me, with the torches and all that, I think it's a dangerous image, especially when you have so many BHO explosions from people trying to extract BHO. It's dangerous. It's dangerous in public, and it's not the right message out there. And again, that's not a popular opinion. Don't shoot the messenger.
No.
Those are just the facts.
Cheryl,
when I look at like the media playback, you know?
Yeah.
And we really appreciate it.
We ask the hard questions.
Yeah. Now, the Beverly Hills High Society, now, that's the reality show that's going to be coming out soon, correct?
Yeah, we're in production now. The working title for the show is technically High Society. That could change. We don't know. One of the issues is High Society is also a porn magazine, so we have to be careful.
Hey, you'll get a lot of
shit.
We're
shooting now. I'm very excited. Morgan Spurlock is joining our team, so I love him. He's great. And so we just want to, you know, try to highlight, so to speak, the people who are doing it right, what's going on, and, you know, just how cannabis works every day. And it's so funny. I was talking to our agents the other day, and he said, you know what, people are going to tune in because it's marijuana, and marijuana is such a hot topic. But when they tune in and see it's women, what women are doing with this, they seem to think it's going to be a hit. So with God's help, help with people like yours, it will be, and it'll be great.
Imagine all the housewives and moms that are going to come out of that can of closet now.
Yeah.
They're not going
to have
tea parties anymore.
Some of the moms that are growing it, you know, for their children and
for themselves.
For themselves,
yeah.
Oh, Cheryl, well this is amazing. Oh, go ahead.
That's one of the reasons I do it. You know, I had the honor of being asked to work with Moms for Marijuana a couple of years ago, and it's with great pride that I work with, you know, women. We have over 80,000 women all across the country that support the Moms for Marijuana work. And Sarah Frank was a young woman who started it back in 2005 as a support system for other moms. And I really love, you know, we've received over 200,000 emails since we started this media campaign. And it's really nice because you wake up every morning and it's like someone's thanking you, like, oh, my God, thank you so much for, you know, coming out and talking about marijuana, because now I can talk to my mom, or now I can talk to my husband, and now I don't have to sneak anymore. And they know that they're not alone. So it's really, really nice. And you know what they say, when moms agree, you know, when it's got that mom seal of approval, then it's okay.
Yeah, right? It's like you're going to need a Doris Day spokesperson for it.
Well, it's going to be interesting, guys. I'm very excited.
It is exciting, and it is it's an avalanche of excitement, and because cannabis really is such a wonderful plant, you know, and not only medicinally, but, you know, think about what Doug Fine was talking about, hemp, and his book Hemp Found coming out, and all the uses, you know, just from the stock of the plant alone. And, you know, he's running his little mobile on it to get over here, you know, to get to the airport. And it's amazing what we're doing, and that our country is now, you know, letting scientific hemp be grown. So we're getting there.
Yeah.
You know, when we, Amy and I, when we did the show with Dr. Sanjay Gupta, we were talking about it, and, you know, I think it's very true. If cannabis were discovered today in the Amazon jungle, there would be breaking news stories all around the world that, oh, my God, there's been this new miracle plant, superfood, miracle drug discovered in the Amazon jungle, and it's cannabis. Well, we've known about it all along. It's just coming back out of the closet, you know, and I look at it this way, you know, cannabis and hemp both, they're both amazing plants, but what's even more amazing is they have all of these superpowers and superfoods and miraculous healing qualities for people. But not only can it heal a multitude of illnesses, these plants can both also heal our economy, you know?
Yes.
And
well,
when you look at that, I mean, that's...
Knock a little chip in that desk.
Little. Boulder.
A boulder.
Boulder that deficit down, baby.
And Denver.
Yeah.
Well, I was so excited when I saw that, you know, they're having record-breaking sales and so forth in Denver, you know, and $5 million in 5 days and all the tax revenue that
yeah.
they raised.
Oh,
look at what we can do with that money to help put people back to work and retrain them and, you know, after-school programs and veterans programs. There's just so many great things that we can do. And I think that's really the secret. When the government realizes that we can take care of so many other people by generating the revenue from this plan, it's a miracle. It really is.
It is a miracle, and it will, you know, it can happen really quickly because of how fast hemp grows, you know, and how many people already know about it. I love the fact that all these statistics are coming out about, you know, the taxes and, you know, $5 million in a week and how many patients are coming out. But this is just the tip of the iceberg, like you were saying. Imagine when our government legalizes it or does whatever, it regulates it somehow, how many more people are going to come out for this? It's going to be insane.
Well, and how many people are using this plant in so many other ways that we might not even know about yet.
Yeah.
You know that it's working for them. And with a collective audience or, you know, collective part of people using this plant, you're going to get a lot more ideas and a lot of people behind it.
I think you're right. Now, my big question is, what are you guys doing for 420 holiday?
Well, there's a big party in Phoenix.
Yeah, we're doing a tastings and...
Yeah, they have a farmer's market going on, so yeah. Phoenix is doing a big thing. I'm not sure what's happening around Tucson, around Tucson, Arizona yet. We're waiting to plan that one here. What are you doing? Beverly Hills has got to be turning it up. Right. Holy cow, yeah.
Are you having a party?
Yeah, hey.
We are. We're having a big mansion party here, so it's going to be cool. If you guys are ever in L.A., you have to let me know, and we'll have you over.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
That would be a blast.
Yeah, hello.
420
share,
in Beverly.
So I have a kind of a fun question for you.
Sure.
We always like to ask our interviewees here, what's your favorite strain, and is it something that you grow?
Well, yeah, you know something, my daughter and I, we started with 31 flavors of cannabis when we started our garden, so I actually have a number of...
Love it.
Yeah, for to go to bed at night, I love OG Kush because it really helps with my chronic pain. I always get a good night's sleep. But for a daytime, I like to use a solid sativa base. So I use Barney's Farm, which is a strawberry cough strain.
Oh, okay.
And it's a total 100% sativa. So during the day, I like that, and then I love my OG Kush for nighttime.
Who needs coffee, right? Jeez.
Yeah, Cheryl, you've got full steam ahead.
That's my hero right there, 100% sativa. Lay me out.
I know.
Cannabis and coffee, great way to start out the morning.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much. It really has been well worth the wait, and it's our pleasure and honor to have you on our show, and we hope to do so again.
Yes, and we'd love to talk to you a little bit more and see what things are going on in the future.
Likewise, anytime, and thanks so much for having me, and I look forward to meeting you guys in person.
Absolutely. Do you want to give a quick shout-out to where people can find you in the web and in the world out there?
Oh, absolutely. For businesses and so forth who are looking for PR and branding for their companies, they can find us on CherylSchuman.com, which is CherylSchuman. And for people interested in the Beverly Hills Cannabis Club and what we have going on there, they can look up BeverlyHillsCannabisClub.com. And I'm also all over the Internet and social media. So Facebook is Cheryl Schuman, Inc. on Facebook and Cheryl Schuman on Twitter, Cheryl Schuman on Instagram, and I love my social media friends, so feel free to send me a friend request.
Awesome.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank
you,
Cheryl.
Well, Cheryl, it was so great having you on today. We really enjoyed talking to you the last, and we'll definitely look forward to having you on soon.
Yes, thank you, and enjoy.
Thank you.
Day.
Okay.
All right.
Have a great day, you guys. Bye-bye.
You too. Thank you, Cheryl. Woo. All right.
Awesome. Wow. Almost half. We're halfway.
I know, halfway through here.
Halfway through.
And we've got...
She's so great.
That
she's
was,
doing so much.
She is. No wonder she needs a 100%
sativa
all day. That's awesome.
I thought about how...
What a sweet lady, too. Very, very sweet.
Yes.
My goodness. And thanks to to all she's doing out there. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of hard work. I don't think people realize out there, you know, patients go get their meds and they, you know, they click on their TV and they watch the shows and they think, oh, that's cool and that's great. These people, Cheryl Schumann's out there. She's out there every day. She's waking up with a mission, and she's got goals on how she can further the Canna cause.
Getting
out in the public eye. She's got her PR marketing going. She's got her cannabis going. And
she's teaching people that normalizing it. And I love that, that she said she was going in there and trying to find that, you know, that woman that has the kids and, you know, that she's smoking in the water closet, blowing it out the window.
Yeah.
Or, you know, or, and it is normalizing everybody. It, making that it's not
an
that.
An everyday household term.
Right.
Cannabis.
Bringing
oh, big deal. Yeah. You want
back to basics.
No big deal. Sitting around the coffee table at the end of the night, you know, after dinner. Maybe a glass of wine, maybe a stogie, as my mom would call it.
So, you know, she was talking about setting down like a, kind of like a cannabis sommelier, you know, a wine, a cannabis tasting.
Yes.
With all those different terpenoids that you're going to be tasting. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
If you come on down to Tumbleweeds, you can try some of our...
Dougie said there are hundreds.
There's hundreds.
Hundreds of cannabinoids.
And then there's, you know, the terpenoids that are also in there, the flavors, the taste, the smell.
Oh, my goodness. We need a whole book on just those. All right. Yeah. This is exciting. Our lawyer is on the line right now. Woo-hoo!
Awesome.
Attorney Tom Dean. We love him. I'm going to read just a little bit of Mr. Dean's bio here, and then we're going to push play and have him on. I love it. Tom Dean's passion for marijuana law reform began in Cleveland, Ohio, before he became an attorney. In fact, marijuana policy reform was his primary motivation to attend law school. As a college student in Ohio, he gradually became involved in marijuana policy reform by attending rallies and carefully studying the history and impact of marijuana prohibition. By the time he was admitted to the practice of law in 1993, his purpose had crystallized and he directed his attention to the marijuana policy reform movement. More specifically, he found that standing up for the rights of those charged with marijuana offenses was his calling, a commitment that continues to this day. We're going to read that, and we are with that, we're going to welcome Mr. Tom Dean. Are you there, Mr. Dean?
Yes, I am. Thank you for that introduction. How are you guys today? Let me say congratulations on your two-year anniversary. It seems like just a moment ago when you guys got started and you've been doing so well. So congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Thank
it
you.
Does. It seems like yesterday I just said, oh, let's just do this. And then everything went
well. It's all back on the right track.
Wow, I bet you have a lot to share in the legal world. There is just so much happening. From the dispensary process is opening up again in May. We've got busted. We've got farmers markets. We want to talk to you about these farmers markets that are out
that
there,
works.
How that works. And we have a question about guns and having your marijuana with you. And, you know, wow, so many things. Tell us what's going on up in Phoenix.
Yeah, there's a lot, you know, going up in Phoenix, and part of the reason is because we have such a kind of an unfriendly county attorney's office up here. It seems to be at the forefront of trying to come up with new and innovative ways to frustrate the intent of the voters here in Arizona to allow people to medicate with marijuana and to acquire their medicine. We have, you know, had a lot of victories along the way. The position of the Maricopa County Attorney's Office has consistently been overruled by the courts. They're overreaching, seems, in any way they possibly can. And unfortunately, oftentimes, the Maricopa County Attorney's Office example that they set is followed by other counties in Arizona. So the battle, though, seems to always originate here. Most recently, as you know, you're probably familiar with the ACLU's lawsuit where they are, the Welton case, where they're representing a minor in trying to advocate for his right to use concentrate products rather than having to to smoke marijuana. His parents, of course, would prefer that he not have to smoke it. And so the ACLU here in Arizona has been trying to advance his rights in that regard. Well, and that's Dan Pakoda at the ACLU. He heads up the ACLU here in Arizona, does a real good job. But then more recently, just a couple weeks ago, we on the criminal side, there's a criminal prosecution against a young man for possession of a narcotic drug and a hash oil. And the we went to hearing on that case, and the judge agreed with us that that is a Maricopa County Superior Court judge agreed that the Medical Marijuana Act does allow for the use of concentrated products like hash oil, butter, or any edibles that they might be infused in. So that was a big victory. The state has filed a motion to reconsider, so it looks like, which is typically a prelude to filing an appeal. And so we expect that more than likely here in the coming weeks we're going to see an appeal by the state to that is Maricopa County Attorney's Office to appeal that decision to the Court of Appeals. So the battle continues, but importantly, we prevailed on that a couple of weeks ago. So you know, hopefully that will start to curb the efforts by the prosecutor's office here in Maricopa County to harass and bother patients who are certainly well within their rights in using these products.
Oh, I was just going to ask, what was their basis for allowing it because of what it says in the statute?
Yeah, that's right. The statute, when you look in the definitions section, it talks about usable marijuana as being defined as the dried flower and any mixture or preparation thereof. It goes on to talk about in calculating the allowable amount, like for a patient, which would be 2.5 ounces, in a food or drink product, that the marijuana part of the product has to be subtracted and weighed separately. And therein lies the real motive for the state to try and get the concentrates declared illegal, because they lack the sophistication to be able to separate out the marijuana components from, let's say, you know, like a brownie or a tincture, and weighing it independently. In other words, the state doesn't have the ability, if they were to pull over a truck filled with, let's say, infused brownies, they don't have the ability to prove that those brownies, and if there may be 1,000 pounds worth of them, they don't have the ability to prove that those brownies contain more than 2.5 ounces of actual marijuana. So for them, it makes enforcement extremely, you know, challenging. And that's, I think, why, and I know that's why, because I've read grand jury transcripts where that's specifically the problem that they cite when they're talking about why they are so desperate to try and get these concentrates or infused edibles declared unlawful. But I think they're going to fail in that regard, and, you know, so far, so good.
Well, they'll just have to make sure that packaging, you know, is inclusive of what's in it, right? I mean, they can solve that by packaging problems,
yeah,
right?
Making sure that it's used with...
labeled properly?
Right.
How much
is
in it?
I think that's probably true when it comes to products purchased at a dispensary, for example, but I don't think that they can require a patient who might do the extraction and infusion him or herself. I don't think they can require that patient to put a label on their medicine. So I think that that's the problem, because, you know, it's not just dispensaries that can do this. I mean, anybody who has marijuana could go ahead and extract in whatever method they want, and then infuse it into an edible if they want, or just have it as a wax even, or a butter or a hash oil or anything like that. So I don't think that that's really a solution for them. And it's just tough luck for the state. I mean, the voters passed this the way it was written, and if that's inconvenient for the state, then, you know, quite frankly, you know, that's their problem, and they better just get used to the idea that the bottom line is there are some voters don't want people prosecuted for marijuana-related offenses. And, you know, this idea that somehow concentrates, and including wax. You know, a lot of people think of wax as, well, that's really strong stuff, and, well, that may be true, but so is codeine, which is an extraction from cocaine, and so is morphine, which is an extraction from the poppy plant. You know, and so is aspirin, which is a concentrate from, I think it's, what, willow bark. So all of these medications that we typically use today are all extractions and concentrations of a naturally occurring plant. I mean, when was the last time anyone went to the hospital with, I don't know, a kidney stone or having been in a car accident, and they're handed an opium pipe and told to go ahead and smoke that till you feel better? I mean, no, they give them morphine. Why? Because it's the most effective dose concentrated to achieve the desired medicinal effect. And that's the same thing with a marijuana concentrate. So I think that, you know, the state is dead wrong on this, but again, you know, they're desperate to try and find any angle. And one of the more concerning ones that we're fighting right now in multiple courts, including the Supreme Court, where I have an amicus brief filed on behalf of Normal, is the DUI metabolite issue.
Going to ask
which
that.
Is, yeah, probably the most problematic issue there out there right now is this idea that the state has that a patient who has metabolite, THC metabolites in his or her system, could be subject to the automatic DUI, sometimes referred to as DUI per se. It's the DUI that doesn't require that the state prove any type of actual impairment, but only has to prove that the person had these marijuana metabolites, these THC metabolites in their system at the time of driving. And, of course, if they are ultimately successful in that argued position, then it would put people in the position of having to choose between basically their driving privileges or being a medical marijuana patient. And that's certainly not anything that the Act ever intended that would be a choice that patients would have to make.
Because that's not a choice that the Vicodin users
and
the Dilaudid and OxyContin users are making.
OxyContin, or there's going to be a DUI checkpoint for them,
they're
too?
They're giving them 3 months' supplies and saying, be careful. Don't drive.
You shouldn't drive.
So right now, that issue is a live issue that patients have to be a little mindful of because right now, in most of Arizona, thankfully, most law enforcement agencies and prosecutors' offices around Arizona don't believe that they have the authority to prosecute a patient simply for having metabolites in their system. But, you know, Pinal County, Maricopa County, and I think maybe one or two other counties around the state are definitely trying to take that position. And we're in front of the Supreme Court right now. Hopefully we'll get a decision on that in the coming, any time now. I mean, the coming days, hopefully we'll find out how the Supreme Court weighs in on the issue.
Wow. So there's no actual DUI number for cannabis users, like there is
not in Arizona. Right. When it comes to what people call a zero-tolerance state, meaning that unlike, for instance, in Colorado, where they require that the active THC levels be, I believe, over 5 nanograms, here in Arizona, it's zero. So, and that actually, you know, is the other issue that's in front of the Supreme Court, whether or not that can be inactive metabolites or not. So, because there's inactive and there's active THC metabolites. But, you know, unfortunately, Arizona is a zero-tolerance state. You know, it's really difficult to put a meaningful number like an alcohol, blood alcohol concentration It's really hard to assign a number like that in connection with THC levels, because there's really no science that can accurately predict whether a person is actually impaired or not at any given level of THC in their blood. You know, the Olympic Committee recently moved theirs up from 5 to 50, and 50 is a good number. They did a good job in recognizing that, you know, they're not trying to say that marijuana is a performance-enhancing drug, so it's not really something that they should have a zero-tolerance position on, you know, but they also, I think, and legitimately, were concerned that they also don't want athletes who might be involved in potentially dangerous athletic performances, like, you know, gymnastics, say, or
yeah.
whatever, to be actually impaired at the time that they were performing. So they put that 50 nanogram level there because, in their opinion, you know, people under 50 weren't really likely to be actually impaired. So, you know, there's the numbers are all over. It's a broad spectrum, and that's just because there is really no science that can say at any particular level whether a person is actually impaired.
So here's a question for you, speaking of numbers. How do you feel about the age difference between allowing cannabis use at 18 or 21?
Well, I think that, you know, and my background is coming from NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. I was legal director for that organization in Washington, D.C. for a time back in the 90s. I'm still a lifetime member of their legal committee. And our position has always been that certainly marijuana use legalized should be restricted to adults, and that certainly minors, just like cigarettes or alcohol, shouldn't be able to purchase or use the marijuana, you know, unless you have a legitimate medical situation where the doctors are on board and so forth. And that this is, sorry, I've got a plane coming overhead here. And this is you know, a medicine that he's using for legitimate medical purposes, like this young boy that the ACLU is representing in the case we talked about earlier. But as far as whether it should be 18 or 21, there does appear to be some indication that marijuana can affect the developing brain. We don't know how it might affect developing brain or whether that might be good or bad, but there are some preliminary studies indicating in I think rats, indicating that while the brain is developing, marijuana might have some effect. I mean, I think probably certainly nothing like, for instance, Ritalin would have, or any of these other strong pharmaceutical drugs that a lot of parents seem willing to put their kids on. But there is, and we don't know yet. More studies need to be done. But we know that the brain doesn't stop developing until a person's in their early 20s. So, like, to err on the side of caution, when it comes to legalization and recreational use, Until we see studies that show that there's not anything to worry about as far as any possible effect on the developing brain, I would be more comfortable sticking with 21. You know, we can. I would certainly be willing to revisit that as more studies are done, because these studies that they have, there's only one or two, and so it's just not enough yet to more research needs to be done. But I mean, one thing that we do know is, though, that there is no effect on the adult brain. That is, the brain once developed, you know, certainly there, all the studies have conclusively proven that there is absolutely no long-term effect to using marijuana. The short-term effect is actually beneficial in that it does have which is why in Arizona one of our conditions is Alzheimer's disease, because it does very clearly protect brain cells from damage. It's a preservative. It definitely has a preservative effect on the brain. So once the brain is fully developed, so that's kind of my long answer to that question.
Well, and that's the reason our government has patents on the cannabinoids in the plant, is because it is a neuroprotectant, and they do know that. I have another legal question for you, a couple of them actually. What's the deal with guns and cannabis? I know that different officers react different ways, but what is the real law about having your cannabis and having a firearm?
Well, this is where we get into a distinction between federal law and state law. I'm talking in terms right now about if you're a registered patient in Arizona, can you get in trouble for having a gun? Is there a problem with that? And certainly under Arizona law, the answer is no, there is not. But under federal law, despite a lot of the recent changes in policy towards medical marijuana, most recently, I think, was the relaxation of rules that banks have to follow. And across the board, we've seen a lot of policy changes in reflecting the current administration's willingness to allow the use of medical marijuana in states that have legalized it for that purpose. But under federal law still, the issue of guns is problematic. The FTA issue, this is where this problem stems from. The FTA issued a policy memorandum a couple of years ago, and it's always been that it's illegal to buy or own a gun if you are a habitual drug user or addict. And that's why when you go to a gun store and you want to buy a gun, you have to fill out this application, and then they do a background check and so forth. But one of the questions is something like that. Are you a habitual drug user or something like that? I can't remember exactly how it's phrased.
Yeah.
And, patients usually would say, well, no, I'm not, because they're not using an illegal drug. The marijuana that patient using has been decriminalized for them. But the FTA then issued this policy memorandum that stated, if you are a medical marijuana patient, a registered medical marijuana patient, you are presumed to be a habitual drug user or drug abuser. So that then meant that people, if they were patients, had to check that box, which would preclude them from purchasing a firearm. And that's really where the problem comes from, because in the unlikely event that the federal law enforcement was ever to attempt to investigate a medical marijuana user, which, again, it's highly unlikely that they would ever expend the resources to do that unless they suspected that individual of more serious crimes. But technically, their policy would mean that if a patient was found to be in possession of a firearm, that could be a criminal offense under federal law, and the person could be subject to prosecution in federal court. I'm not aware of any example of that actually happening to a patient. I think, though, primarily the impact of the policy has been to make it more difficult for patients to be able to purchase firearms, because when they, fill that form out, they're automatic, if they do it the way that the government tells them they're supposed to, by checking the box that says they're a drug user, they are denied the right to purchase a gun. And so they're left to go and purchase their firearms at like a gun show or something like that, where they're not required to fill out that form. But, I think remain concerned that if for some reason the federal government ever did come sniffing around, that, technically they might get in trouble for having that. But, again, I haven't seen anything happen yet to a patient, any example of that type of thing. So I don't think it's really anything that anyone should be very concerned about right now. But, technically the federal government still it has an issue with it.
Interesting. Yeah. On a side note, we're asked
now,
about...
When it comes to a larger... Let me just add to that. When it comes to, say, you know, a dispensary, or a grow that might be more likely to be on the federal government's radar, if
right.
for some reason they were to raid that dispensary, which we don't expect they will, certainly under the current administration's policy, we would never expect that to happen here in Arizona. It continues to happen in California, but there's reasons for that. The way that the government articulated their policy, there's reasons why dispensaries continue to have that happen in California. But when they do find guns there at those dispensaries, then almost always there's also some type of weapons misconduct charge filed, and then also the presence of the firearm can subject the individual to a greater range of sentencing if they're convicted. So that's so there is dispensaries maybe have a little bit more to be concerned about, since unlike patients, that they're probably something that the federal government does keep tabs on anyhow.
In a way, it just kind of sets dispensary owners up for to get when they do get raided. You know, they already have those guns there because they're trying to protect themselves and their money, because the banks won't let them.
Right.
So it was all set up to even not even
set up
to try to work.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
So
yeah, you're absolutely right.
I mean, it doesn't. You're making it work. So, Tom, do you think changing the scheduling of this all? I mean, would this put us in a different space? I mean, would this the conversation be totally different?
I'm sorry. Could you? I caught part of that. I didn't catch the whole thing. You could restate that.
The scheduling of cannabis would. I mean, if that was different, would we be having a different conversation?
Well, yeah, we would. Although, you know, the rescheduling of marijuana, it depends a lot on what it's rescheduled to. I mean, I don't think that we're likely to see marijuana, you know, being completely taken off the schedule, which would be what would happen if it were legalized, for instance, by the federal government. So we're going to see it probably put into a Schedule 2 when that day comes. And the problem with that is it becomes like, I mean, cocaine is a Schedule 2 drug, and morphine, you know, is a Schedule 2. So it doesn't really matter. It's still illegal unless it's been prescribed by a physician. So yeah, just like someone who has cocaine or morphine, even though that stuff is legal to prescribe or use for medical purposes under federal law, I mean, certainly having that and firearms together is a federal criminal offense. So no, rescheduling marijuana wouldn't really help. I mean, what we want is marijuana to be taken off of the schedule altogether. I mean, ultimately, that's really the objective, that it becomes like, I mean, for instance, tobacco isn't a scheduled drug. Alcohol isn't a scheduled drug. We don't want marijuana to be a scheduled drug. We want it to be something that, you know, you certainly maybe have to have a license to grow it or sell it, like you would with, for instance, tobacco products. But I don't think that, it ought to be something that a physician has to prescribe in order for a person to lawfully possess it. I mean, I think the time has come. Just like, there's recently some friends of mine, attorneys in California, filed a petition to the Federal Court of Appeals, and that was arguing that marijuana use recreationally should be treated in the same way that sodomy laws were treated by the Supreme Court, and that is that it was typical that states had laws prohibiting sodomy in the United States at one point, and then multiple states began to legalize sodomy, and So there were, at the time that this issue went to the Supreme Court, there were 24 states that had legalized sodomy, and the Supreme Court held that, you know, that at that point, that was an indication that our values as a society had evolved to the point where it was no longer constitutional for the for any state to continue to say that sodomy was something that could be criminally prosecuted. So this petition was filed just a couple weeks ago, arguing the same thing when it came to the use of marijuana, that so many states had decriminalized or legalized or medicalized marijuana in a much faster, in a much shorter span of time than what the court had looked at under the sodomy laws. And therefore, under the same reasoning, at this point, the Supreme Court should declare, and right now it's in the Ninth Circuit, should declare that states really at this point are no longer permitted to pass laws that prohibit the use of marijuana. So we do think that it has it is afforded protection as a basic human right at this point. So that's where we end up, not with sort of just a slight improvement in scheduling, because that'll still subject millions of people to issued incarceration and all the other punishments along with marijuana prohibition.
Well, that's an interesting thought about just not scheduling it at all. I hadn't thought about it. I like it.
I thought it had to be somewhere.
Yeah, I had to thought it.
I don't know why.
Too.
I guess
it does. Out in the garden. That's
right. Yes, you got to be exactly what you're fighting for and taking it off. I'm for that one.
Yeah, totally for that one.
Wow, that is really interesting.
Yeah. Well,
you
I have
a, so much good information.
I know. I have just a quick question about these farmers markets going on up in Phoenix. What do you think about those? How are they getting away with those?
Well, I have I know people that are involved in those farmers markets, friends with people who are involved in farmers markets. I know that the government's position, at least in Maricopa County, and again, we sort of have a patchwork, of policies across the state from county to county. And so a lot of it, I think, depends on where you might be. What are you in Coconino County, up in Flagstaff, or Pima County, or are you in Maricopa County, or God forbid, Navajo County, or Yavapai County, I mean, there's such a different, such a broad spectrum of interpretation. But certainly, the counties that are more conservative, to use a nice word, bigoted, possibly to use an inaccurate word, are definitely interpreting the act in a way that would mean that those types of operations, like the farmers market, are unlawful. And that really involves a technical reading of part of the Medical Marijuana Act. It's codified as Arizona Revised Statute 36-2811B3, which is the patient-to-patient transfer provision. The state reads that in a restrictive way to mean that while they admit that patients may transfer marijuana to another patient, that they cannot receive anything of value in return, like money or even like services, like, hey, you're my lawyer. I'd like to hire you. Can I pay you with medicine? I'm a patient. You're a patient. The government's position has been consistently that no, you can't do that, because those legal services would be something of value that you're giving in return for the receipt, the transfer of marijuana patient to patient. So that's the reading that we've been fighting against, and I've been involved in fighting against that interpretation for, you know, almost 3 years now, since the Attorney General's office filed a civil lawsuit, an action for declaratory judgment against a handful of compassion clubs. I represented at the time the now defunct 2811 Club, located
right.
in Phoenix. I was able to get the judge to deny the Attorney General's office request for a preliminary injunction. And before we were able to get to trial on the case, the state actually dismissed. And so we never got an interpretation, an examination of the statute by the court. And I think that's because the state was ultimately, I think, insecure in their position. So they shifted tactics then from a civil, let's just ask the court to interpret this and then we'll all abide by the court's ruling. They switched from that to a criminal prosecution. You've seen that down in Pima County, been here in Maricopa County. I've represented people in Pima County, Maricopa County, Navajo County, on these allegations that they're operating as, you know, what's commonly referred to as a compassion club, or more often now is referred to as an unlicensed dispensary, is what they seem to be the preferred the name that the government likes to use. But their interpretation, I think, is incorrect. I think the proper interpretation of the statute is that while it is clear that when a patient or a caregiver transfers marijuana to a dispensary, they cannot be compensated. That seems to be crystal clear, and it's reiterated in other places in the Arizona Medical Marijuana Act, that restriction on patient to dispensary transfers. Nothing of value can ever be given in return by the dispensary when a patient donates marijuana to a dispensary. That's without question a correct interpretation. But to take that nothing of value part of the statute and then apply it to patient-to-patient transfers, I think is definitely taking it out of context and misapplying it. And, you know, I think certainly it goes against the purpose of the Medical Marijuana Act, which is in Section 2G of Prop 203, and states that the purpose of the initiative is to protect patients and providers from prosecution, criminal and other penalties. Certainly, the state's interpretation would seem to go against the very purpose of the act. But you know, you can look at other provisions of the act and see that their interpretation, their restrictive interpretation, that nothing of value can be given in return, is not supported. For instance, you look at the section of the Medical Marijuana Act that talks about when a patient can have their card revoked, their registration revoked. It says that it can be revoked when a patient is found to have transferred marijuana to a non-patient. So if indeed, as the state argues, patient-to-patient transfers of marijuana, patient-to-patient sales of marijuana are just as illegal as patient-to-non-patient sales of marijuana, then why is it that a person doesn't get their card revoked when they sell marijuana to a patient? Why it's only when they sell marijuana to a non-patient? So it seems to me that the government's position is untenable. The problem being is that they will do multiple controlled buys, as they refer to them, and they'll put people in position where they're facing mandatory prison, felony conviction and mandatory imprisonment if they should fight and lose. And then they give them a really good deal, a plea deal that is almost kind of like an offer that they can't refuse. And so that's how they by stacking the deck, so to speak, they prevent anyone from having the courage, the willingness to subject themselves to possible mandatory imprisonment if they lose. And so the argument is typically, we don't see the argument being made in these cases, although I continue to do it every chance I get. And we do unfortunately the only decision that we've ever gotten. I've had judges, I've had the county attorney's office turn around and dismiss the case. I've had county attorney's office turn around and make a misdemeanor offer that my client can't refuse. I've had a judge in Pima County say that he just couldn't decide, you know, the issue at the time. And, you know, we finally did get one decision on the issue, I should say, which is in Navajo County. That was the county that had the highest percentage of no votes to Prop 203, incidentally. But that judge denied the motion to dismiss. But the client in that case, the owner of the Compassion Club in that case, was given a deal where she can walk away with a misdemeanor. So she ended up taking that. So we're not going to be appealing that decision. So we continue to not have an answer yet on that. And I think the strategy by the state is to continue to prosecute people, give them these deals, so they get up in front of a judge and plead guilty for patient-to-patient sales, and then sort of over time, that kind of becomes the status quo interpretation that the courts begin to become comfortable with. So that's my concern, and someone really does have to, we have to take this issue up to the Supreme Court.
Absolutely. Do you think we're going to legalize this year?
Do I think what?
We're going to legalize like Colorado and Washington this year?
I think that the issue is not is a technical one, and whether enough signatures will be gathered to get this on the ballot. I mean, I think, you know, there's still my understanding is that then Dennis Volke, who's a good guy and done a great job writing up that very short and concise legalization initiative, a proposed initiative. I just I don't know if the resources are there. It's expensive to get something on the ballot. You know, these signature collectors typically expect $1 a signature, and you know, this has been a total grassroots, totally unfunded you know, attempt, and I think they've done really good. I'm just not sure if it's good enough to get it on the ballot. I think that the Marijuana Policy Project, which is the same organization that got Prop 203, that wrote Prop 203 and got it on the ballot and campaigned for it back in 2010, have announced that they are behind, they're going to throw their weight behind a legalization initiative in Arizona in 2016. So I think that no question they'll get that on the ballot in 2016 if they follow through with that. And I've already been in contact with them about working with them and drafting that legalization initiative. I think that was an oversight by that group in 2010 not to involve local criminal defense attorneys in the process of writing the Medical Marijuana Act.
Yeah.
You know, there's been so many problems with him. Yeah. So and they're very receptive to that. So beginning at some point in about a year or so, they're going to start to sit down and write this thing out and then start to, you know, try to gather signatures. So I think definitely on the ballot in 2016, and I think it's going to be close. You know, I really do. The majority of Arizonans seem to favor legalization, but I know that the government is already strategizing about how to campaign against the act. You know, they feel like they got caught off guard with the Medical Marijuana Act, which to me is just ridiculous. I mean, because it was the third time that thing was put on the ballot and passed, you know. How they could act like, well, we were caught by surprise, we weren't ready. I mean, I don't know, but they're going to definitely do everything they possibly can to campaign against it. And if they can get a conservative turnout, we might not make it through. But if it's a regular, your average, typical turnout of voters, like, you know, conservative to liberal, I think it's likely to pass. So we'll just have to see who comes out and votes, you know.
That's true. That's true. We do get a lot of voters here. One just quick thing. Give us a little advice before you head out here on police officers and our cars and our homes. What do they have the rights to and what do they don't? Not.
Okay. Well, gosh, you know, I wish I could give you quick answers, you know, but I guess it's part of my it's a lawyer thing, I guess. I don't know. It's hard for me to. I'll try to give you a short answer on that. You know, it's always been that police need to have a warrant in order to enter a home. There are certain exceptions to the warrant requirement, one of which is if the officer has probable cause that evidence is in the process of being destroyed, then they may enter the home without first getting a warrant. For decades, therefore, the odor of burning marijuana has always been an exception to the warrant requirement because, well, it's evidence that's in the process of being destroyed. You know, it's being smoked. So it's kind of not really that funny because, you know, it's just something that has been a problem for a long time. Officers charge into a home or a car or whatever it may be just based on the odor of burning marijuana. Now, that should be different now, though, in Arizona with the passage of the Medical Marijuana Act. The Supreme Courts of Massachusetts and Minnesota have both weighed in on this issue. These are states where the possession of smaller amounts of marijuana is not illegal, and they said that, look, unless somehow your nose can tell the difference between, you know, an ounce of marijuana and a pound of marijuana, then you don't have probable cause. And unless you know whether that person, the odor of burning marijuana is in connection with an amount of marijuana that's more than what's allowed to be possessed, then you don't have probable cause to enter the home because it's not probable cause whether there's marijuana, it's probable cause of whether a crime's being committed. And if the crime, if it's not necessarily a crime to possess marijuana in Arizona, well, then it's no longer probable cause just to smell it. Now, let me be clear, that argument has yet to be made in Arizona, you know, and I hope to be making it soon. Certainly, I think we've got precedents from other states and even precedents in our own Court of Appeals, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals on this issue. And I think that that we should prevail because how can a cop smell marijuana and be able to say that that means there's a crime taking place when tens of thousands of people in Arizona are it's perfectly lawful for them to possess and smoke it?
That's right. Good question.
So unless you know ahead of time whether the person who's apparently smoking the marijuana is not a patient, then in my opinion, then that can't be probable cause. And you know, of course, there's no way for them to know that. So that's the long answer to that question. It's another gray area, like so many of these issues in medical marijuana here in Arizona. It's another gray area. So. But the traditional rule has been that the officer cannot enter your home unless he smells the odor of burning marijuana. For a vehicle, the traditional rule has been, and again, until it's changed, using the argument that I just described, the rule is that if an officer smells burning or unburnt marijuana, an officer may enter and search a vehicle. That's called the automobile exception. They don't have to get a warrant to search a vehicle. The officer just only has to have probable cause, and then he can go ahead and just search the vehicle without first getting a warrant. That's the way that the law is now and has been for decades. I think, though, that we have a good shot at getting that changed, but that's that argument has yet to be made.
Well, thank you so much for taking so much time to share with us what is going on and how to stay safe in our state anyway.
Yes, definitely.
Yes, pleasure.
And is there
where can someone find you?
Yeah, where can someone find you to get legal help in this state, Mr. Dean?
Sure. They can go to my website, which is ArizonaMarijuanaLaw.com. Or certainly they can give me a call. My office line is 602-635-4990. 602-635-4990. Or they can email me through my website. Again, that's ArizonaMarijuanaLaw.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Mr.
Dean. Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure. Thank you for doing what you do.
Me too.
It's all safe.
Well, thank you, and thank you for doing what you're doing to help all these patients, especially down there in Pima County. I think you're doing a great job, and best of luck in the next 2 years.
Awesome. Thank you.
Well, if you're ever in, stop by.
Yeah.
All right. Bye-bye. Yeah, we'll do. All right, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Wow.
Awesome.
You got that information.
And he's right.
ArizonaMarijuanaLaw.com.
He was right. He has a lot of information, and you can't answer a question.
Unschedule it now.
Because you want it all. You need, and knowing how much information there is out there on the law and the gray
and
area.
Speaking of knowing information, this next guest, Robert Platshorn, thank you for waiting on the line. Needs no introduction, but we'll give him a quick one. He's an activist, famous author, speaker, pitchman, founder of the Silver Tour, and gives the best show on cannabis you will ever see. He's author of Black Tuna Diaries and America's longest 30 years imprisoned nonviolent marijuana offender. Let's just have Robert on, and he can tell us how wonderful he is, because we love Robert. Hello, good morning, Mr. Platshorn.
Hey, my girls, it's such a joy to hear your voice and talk to you.
How are you?
You guys were so good to me when I was in Arizona. I'll love you forever.
Oh, and we love you forever. How are you doing?
I'm doing very good. I wish there were two of me. exciting things are happening here in Florida. We've got a medical marijuana amendment, which is a constitutional amendment on the ballot.
Wow.
And as of this morning, it was polling 96%. I don't think that's ever been done.
Yay.
When I started this in Florida and I got a representative to put the first medical cannabis bill in the legislature, I tried to raise money for the Silver Tour to help push that, and of course to do our work in other states to reach seniors. And all the major donors told me Florida is a waste of money, it's a waste of time. We're going to put our money in places like Colorado and Arizona and Massachusetts, and places where we know we can get some traction for our dollar. And so I had a really tough time raising money to put Should Grandma Smoke Pot on the air and to do our live Silver Tour shows. Everybody disparaged Florida, including the leaders of all the big activist organizations, who shall remain unnamed, but who told me I was crazy for putting so much effort into Florida. Here we are with a constitutional amendment that will pass in November that our insane governor cannot veto. And in addition to that, we've got three bills in the legislature. The one that I started, the Kathy Jordan medical marijuana bill, which is very all-encompassing. This year it has a better chance than ever. There's a full legalization bill that's been proposed. It's actually been filed and has some support, but behind the scenes, it actually has a lot of support. The same Republicans who wouldn't support medical marijuana are not too unhappy about full legalization and what it'll mean for the tourist industry and tax dollars for the state. So it's kind of exciting what's going on here. And I've been busy with media, putting on live Silver Tour shows. And about 3 weeks ago, some people from California came in and put on a business seminar for people who were interested in the cannabis business. And I took a look at the people involved. I had never heard of any of them, which seemed a little odd. And the man in charge claimed the fame was he had a delivery service in California. And I found out they were just charging people a ton of money for information that probably wasn't cogent for Florida and for most people in the business. And you know, I'm a rebel, so I decided to put on a seminar. Ooh. And I've got Mike Booten from Weed Country. You know, Mike's been a grower for 30 years and wow. gives half his crop to patients who can't afford. But nobody knows more about the real business of growing than Mike. I've got the crew from Denver Relief coming in. And, you know, Denver Relief is really the model dispensary for the country. They've been featured on 60 Minutes and CNN and Wall Street Journal. And they've got a consulting company that has been getting licenses and setting up for people in Massachusetts and Connecticut and all over the country. And if anybody can tell people what they're facing and the problems involved, it's my friends from Denver Relief. We've got several local attorneys are going to explain both the national and local legal situation, what can be expected after Amendment 2 passes, what can be expected from the regulations that have already been proposed in the Kathy Jordan bill. We've got real estate experts coming in and two doctors who are extremely pro-marijuana and are Florida doctors. They can talk about the cases there have been that have been won on medical defense and what they have recommended cannabis for, despite resistance from the Florida Medical Association and law enforcement. One's a very prominent addiction specialist who said he's the doctor who's in Should Grandma Smoke Pot, Bob Mitchell, and he said he'll throw out half his prescription book if he can write for cannabis. So it's going to be an exciting time. We've even had people from major public companies who have reserved seats in the seminar. So anybody interested, whether they want to be a caregiver and want to know what's going to be involved, whether they want to be a grower or a dispensary owner or a doctor prescribing or a lawyer involved with the laws, this is going to be a heck of a day. It's from 9 in the morning till 8 at night. And to make sure everybody's got time to network, which will be as valuable as the information coming out, we're going to provide all the meals. I've got the best caterer in the Palm Beaches.
Of course
and
you
I
do.
Took the ballroom. I took the ballroom on top of Hawthorne Suites, a really nice Wyndham hotel that's close to the airport. People can fly in. It's right off 95 if they're driving in. And it's going to be a heck of an event. The link is on my Facebook page. There is nothing about it on the Silver Tour page. Silver Tour is a 501c3. So, you know, all donations are tax exempt. We're an educational organization. But we can't be involved in commercial seminars. But Bobby Platchorn is putting this seminar on, both as myself and my publishing company, TV Publishing. And if I happen to donate a large portion of the profits, if they exist, to Silver Tour, well, that's okay.
Awesome. Absolutely.
But,
Silver Tour is awesome.
Yeah, I put the link up on your chat. It's
good.
Link directly to the Eventbrite ticket site. And by the way, this is not an inexpensive ticket because it wasn't an inexpensive seminar. I'm flying all these people in and paying these really great experts for their expertise, and the ticket is $399. But anybody who's interested seriously in being in the business, it'll put them so far ahead and will save them a tremendous amount of money. There's so much rumor going on about what's going to happen afterwards and very few facts out there. This isn't a blue sky seminar. We're not promising anybody licenses or, you know, they're going to make $1 million or get a job in the industry. We're selling legitimate, we're giving legitimate information with no blue sky. It will be best opinion as to what will be going on after Election Day in November. I posted on your chat the link to the Evan Bright, and the Evan Bright, which is the tickets, has the full schedule, list of speakers, bios of the speakers, etc.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. I just clicked on it, and it's unbelievable. You, if you can afford this, go. This is an incredible opportunity.
It's going to link you up to the people that you need to know
in this industry.
And definitely in this industry. And all the experts are going to be there.
Absolutely.
Real experts, people whose name you recognize and who are all good friends of mine are doing this because they want to see Florida start right, not be a free-for-all like California. I mean, they've got so many problems out there. We're going to do it right here in this state, and we're going to try our best to see that we follow the Colorado model, which I think is best for everyone. It's going to be an interesting day. In fact, the director of my movie, Square Grouper, Billy Corbin, Billy's going to drop in. Billy and his film company, Raconteur, put up the money for our decrim effort on Miami Beach, and we were able to successfully do a petition decrim over there. And you know me, I don't care if I decrim the smallest town in the world. That's some get-backs for me and makes me happy.
Sure does.
That's my get-backs for 30 years in prison. Let's legalize.
Absolutely.
I'll tell you a quick story.
Please.
I taught an adult education class. I was a guest speaker. The class is taught by Frank Cerubino, who's a really great columnist with the Palm Beach Post. And there were about 150, over 50 adults. Most of the adults there were over 50. It was a current events course. And, of course, we talked about cannabis. Frank took the other side. We did a little debate. And then he asked the audience, he said, could you give me a show of hands? How many of you would really like to use marijuana once it's legalized for medical use in Florida? And I thought his socks were going to fall off. About 90% of the audience shot their hands high in the air as quick as they could and were cheering.
I bet.
And this is, you know, seniors who 3 years ago, before I started Silver Tour, would never admit to marijuana use in the past, present, or future. They wouldn't even talk about it. When I started the Silver Tour, they wouldn't let me put on presentations in senior communities. And today, they're calling me.
Yay, that's incredible. Why do you think the shift is? What shifted for them?
Well, to me...
Other than your show.
Well, the Silver Tour, you know, it got me on The Daily Show. They did a feature on my live shows called Old Tokes Home. It was funny, but it brought things out into the sunshine. And the first show I did was covered by the Wall Street Journal and made the front page. CNN has talked about my shows. And seniors became a real subject in connection with marijuana. It had just never been out there. When I decided to start the Silver Tour, not one organization had ever said one word to seniors. They didn't think seniors were their demographic, and they weren't smart enough to know that seniors in a lot of states, yours and mine in particular, make up the most powerful voting bloc that there is.
Yes, they do.
And it was seniors that defeated Prop 19 in California, look at the exit polls, seniors voted 65% against. Nobody was talking to them. That's my generation. We invented marijuana. I mean, we really did, as it's known today. So all they've been a real easy sell. And the Silver Tour was the first to get really big publicity because I'm an ex-convict and I'm talking to seniors. What a great story that made. And you know, if you Google me or Google Silver Tour, you see there have been hundreds of articles, and it's made seniors really comfortable with the subject. And that's all that was necessary. They need it more than anybody else.
That's true. If you haven't seen Should Grandma Smoke Pot, you should absolutely watch it. I love the very first part of it. It talks about they say that by the time you're a senior age, you have 4 major diseases to deal with, at least. Yes, you're absolutely right.
And there are an array of different medications.
Yeah.
Handfuls of some sort.
You got doctors and patients and people like Dr. Andrew Weil in there. And it's really good, hard-hitting information. It's been well-received. And whenever we raise enough money for the Silver Tour, we put it on TV in different states, and especially in states that are trying to legalize or to liberalize their existing legalization laws.
Now, I heard something about you being able to leave Florida here pretty soon.
Well, hopefully. You know, when I came back from that trip to Arizona where I met my girls and went to the Patients Out of Time medical conference, my parole officer, who was a terrific guy, was in the hospital. And I get a phone call. Guy says, "My name's Scott Kersey. I'm your new parole officer." I said, "Uh-oh." Wow. He said, "First thing first, cancel all travel arrangements." And it's been a living hell ever since. He claimed that I had gone to Arizona without travel permission. Mm-hmm. And I said, "Just look in my file. You'll see that it's there." He said, "Yeah, but it's not signed off on." I said, "How many travel requests are in there?" He said, "Oh, about 30, 35. You know, I traveled to promote the movie when it came out, and I was going to every Cannabis Cup and Cannabis Hemp Fest." I said, "How many of those were signed off on?" "None of them." He said, "Well, I did see one." I said, "Why do you think the Arizona trip was without permission?" And he said, "I just have a feeling." I said, "Well, how about calling Tony, my old parole officer in the hospital, and just ask him if I had permission?" He said, "You can bet that's not going to happen."
No.
And consequently, it's been a living hell for me for almost 2 years. He cut off my income. You know, book signings and speaking engagements were almost all of my personal income. He cut that right off at the knees and was very happy to do it. You know, I traveled for 4 years without any kind of a problem. But in May, I'm eligible for full release from this special parole term. And with enough support and a little luck, that'll be the end of that. And I'll be out there in a heartbeat to see you.
Yay! Yeah. Awesome. We will welcome
One
you.
One word. please warn everybody about this kind of waste cam that's going on. It's really terrible. Google it. Look at the complaints. Look under ripoff. There are thousands of people who are being scammed by this worthless hemp oil that they think they're going to get rich on. It's an MLM scam, and it's run by MJNA, the same people who have done this kind of thing over and over again, a pump-and-dump stock. You know, they tried to get me on their board of directors when I came out of prison, and I went out to their headquarters, and I knew the two principals of the company, which I wasn't too comfortable with, and... I saw that they had no substance whatsoever. They had no intention of ever being bricks and mortar and a real company. But this Cannaway scam is just terrible, and they're taking in so many people. They're advertising as a job opportunity, investment opportunity. If you look at my Facebook page, you'll see some details and where you can go look at what it's really about. But they're selling worthless hemp oil products made with not very good hemp oil from China, I think. They're basically selling it to the suckers like Amway. You know, they get you to buy all those products, and then you can sell some to your parents and your cousins, and then you've lost everything else. You didn't get rich. Well, this is worse. That's my social obligation for the day. I just don't like people who give our industry a bad reputation. In fact, you know what? They're using Marilyn Mari's cannabis endocannabinoid system films in order to sell this junk, and she didn't even know about it till a couple days ago. They're using it without permission, as if this hemp oil from hemp seed will do what cannabis does to the endocannabinoid system. That's the implication. But what's his name? Pedersen did a 4 or 5 part series that he filmed, and I guess he's working with them. Marilyn is on fire about it.
Wow.
It's a total misrepresentation. Hemp oil has nothing to do with the endocannabinoid system, as you know.
Well, we had a blogger out there that was asking about your thoughts on the CBD push, but that pretty much answers that. We actually have a question, someone on the line live that wants to ask you a question. Is that okay with you, Robert?
That's fine with me.
All right, welcome to Weed Day Wednesday. What's your question for Robert?
Hello, Robert. Francis in Nashville, Tennessee here. How are you today?
My friend Francis Perry.
Good to talk with you. I'm going to ask a quick question because I'd love to hear you discuss this. Would you please talk about the new phone app, Be Heard, that you mentioned on Facebook for social activism? We're trying to get up and running with it here with TN Normal, the Tennessee chapter of Normal, and it looks like it could be very powerful for us.
I hope it does. Of course, you know my son is involved with that. He was one of the original developers. The guy who had the idea originally came to me, and I knew it was well beyond my capability, writing an app. And now it does so many things, and you know several unions are using it now. It's called Be Heard, and in one touch, you can reach any legislator in your state, any national legislator. You can, in one touch, message, organize, and action everyone who is like-minded, either in your area, in the country, or in the world. It's just an amazing app. I'm still trying to teach myself how to use it. You can download it for Android or iPhone, and just go to Be Heard.
That's awesome.
B-H-E-R-H-E-A-R-D, and download it, and you can contact the company, and they'll be glad to help you set up your group or your like interest group, and it's just amazing. You can, in 1 second, let a legislator know what you think about what he's about to vote on. And when I say you, I mean you and everybody else in one touch can just overwhelm him with don't do it or please do it or whatever you want to say to him. It's an amazing app.
That's great.
It's the letter B, H-E-A-R-D.
Okay, we hope to have it up and running here in Tennessee. Great. Thank you.
I'm really glad you're pleased with it. I've kind of been reticent because, you know, it is my son, and I didn't want to look like I was selling something. I've always been very careful about that. But I'm really excited about where Be Heard is going. It's becoming a sensation nationally, and I love it.
Hey, Robert, what did you think about the question, the response our lawyer had to rescheduling cannabis? He said to just not schedule it at all. What do you think about that? I know it's kind of off subject, but I thought I'd ask your opinion on that one.
No, it's not so off subject. I heard him, and I hope he's not right about it being moved to Schedule 2. It would be the easy way out. Unfortunately,
yeah.
Or maybe fortunately, in order to do that, I think this time they'll have to have a real medical discussion because they'll need to rationalize moving it out of Schedule 1. And if they have a real medical discussion, it's likely not to be in Category 2, Schedule 2. I think it would move way down the list to a much lower category. Ideally, we'd all like to see it completely unscheduled because, you know, scheduling is a department function of the DEA and NIDA. It's done under the Administrative Procedures Act. And they've got the freedom to just put it where they want. It doesn't take Congress. It doesn't take public vote. All they have to do is say, we're going to use our expertise and put it in XYZ schedule. Then they post that in the Federal Register, and the public has 30 days to comment. And the Congress has 30 days to either do something or do nothing. Most times they do nothing, and they let the agency do anything they want. But I think this time there'll be hearings, and if there are hearings, I'm pretty sure it just doesn't fit into Category 2, Schedule 2.
Yeah.
I agree with him. It shouldn't be scheduled, but who knows? Any progress is good progress. That's been my personal feeling. And when I see people complain about a certain regulation in this area or that area, to me that's kind of crying in your beer. I just want to keep legalizing more states, decriminalizing more states, till it's so overwhelming the federal government pulls the plug. And you see it happening now.
Yeah, it is happening. It's awesome.
Really fast.
Really fast. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. For government action, it is. I always felt confident that Obama and his second administration would do what he could. You know, there's a limit to everything. I knew he couldn't do anything in his first administration and then get elected because they'd have had him painted as Harold and Kumar, as the world's greatest stoner. So he waited till the right time. And,
yeah.
You know, last June, I did get permission to travel to Washington and took 150 seniors to lobby at the House of Representatives. And they had never seen seniors asking for safe access to marijuana. It woke up a lot of people and made them realize that they're going against the strongest voting bloc in the country. So it eased the way for Eric Holder 8 weeks later to come out with the guidelines saying they won't interfere with states. And that was the theme of our lobby. Don't interfere with the states that have medical marijuana. Holder came out with the guidelines. To my mind, they were terrific, common sense, easy to follow, and represented tremendous progress. So I'm really happy with the way things are going. Getting the banks involved was very important. They're still being a little resistant, but they'd like complete protection. So they're appearing to hold out, but, you know, they're actually taking cannabis business money quietly.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
It's all good.
Yeah. It's movement in the right direction. It's an avalanche of good cannabis supporters. It's fantastic, especially what you've got coming up. And are you taking the Silver Tour out anymore, or do we get to, after you get to?
I've been doing local live shows with the Silver Tour. Of course, I'm not allowed to travel yet, so it has to be in South Florida. I'm putting Silver Tour on TV wherever I can. I tried real hard for Tennessee and couldn't get a station to approve it, but that was 6 months ago. Francis has been one of my great supporters and wanted to see it run there, and I tried a ton of stations. I have a feeling now that when I go back to the stations that it won't be such a verboten subject. You know, it's funny. I had no trouble getting TV time in Arkansas, Louisiana, a lot of the Bible Belt. And I think Tennessee is almost the only state that I really tried hard and couldn't get approval for the show. But I think I can now. I believe things are so radically different in the past 6 months. And I'm still booking the Silver Tour wherever, this grandma, wherever I can, whenever I have the funds to do so. Silver Tour is a 501(c), and we're the people who are going to pave the way in a lot of states. You get seniors on your side, you have won. There is nobody who, you know, no politician willing to go against a senior push.
It's true. That is true.
Well, you have my mom and dad behind you. I showed you showed them the Should Grandma Smoke Pot commercial the other day, and they loved it and are on board all the way.
Everybody who sees that loves that. They think it's just incredible.
I'm an old pitchman. I'm supposed to be able to tell that story.
And you do it wonderfully.
True.
Excellent. Well, we can't wait to see you again. We hope to see you here or there or anywhere we can. We always love having you on our show. Is there a best way for our audience to reach you? Tell us how
Silver Tour has a contact point. Everybody should be on my Facebook, both my personal, Robert Platchorn. There's actually not much room left. I'm almost up to that 5,000.
You become a fan page.
Right.
I also have a Silver Tour page on Facebook. And that's the one social media I feed all the time. And it automatically also gets posted to Twitter, Bobby Tuna.
Okay.
But so, I'm easy to reach. Anybody messages me on Facebook has got me. And my personal contacts are right there.
Excellent.
Thank you so much.
It's always an honor to have your time and your knowledge. And we thank you for what you're doing. Without you, you know, cannabis wouldn't be moving and grooving and shaking.
Yes,
like
thank you so much for what you do, Robert.
I appreciate the props, and I just love what I do.
And we love you.
Take care, you guys. It's
you
good
too.
To talk to you, and thanks so much for having me on.
Always,
care,
thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Wow.
What a show.
What an amazing show. Holy Toledo.
Robert is doing a lot of different things. I know I had shown my mom and dad the Silver Tour the other day, and they really enjoyed it. I think what he's out there doing is pretty amazing.
He is. He's incredible. And he does make it a show, and it's amazing. And his business forum coming up, I wish we could be there.
Yeah. Sounds like a lot of good people.
Oh, my gosh. A lot of
networking
good
is the most important, folks. It's
you
got to
get out there, be heard, get your voice voted, and get out there and do it. We've got Tumbleweeds Health Center new logo is going to be up on the website pretty soon, so look for that. Also, up in Phoenix, if you check out azmarijuana.com, there's a 420 festival happening. Cheryl was asking what was going on. Check that out. We just might be at the Wild West Fest, I think, the following weekend. Another great festival coming up. And this Saturday, AZ for Normals meeting. So you can check them out at az4normal.org.
The Ward 6 building.
Ward 6 building. Oh, what a show. 2 years.
Yeah, congratulations,
Elstar.
Congratulations,
Kansas Kids. Thank you, guys. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks for listening, everyone out there.
In New York. Yeah, for everybody, for blogging, for calling, for chatting. It's been awesome. You all rock. We would like to thank our guests. We would like to thank Doug Fine for calling in from the airport. That was on his journey to the airport. That was awesome. Our attorney, Tom Dean, thank you for all the wonderful legal information and advice.
Cheryl Schumann. She's awesome.
That's so great, Beverly Hills Cannabis Club. You guys got to get, if you're over there, get a part of, join it.
Yeah.
Get in on their clubs. They're going to have some fun tastings. We
the
need
tastings
to get to those tastings.
Amazing.
And, of course, Robert Flatshorn, always a pleasure. He is just moving and shaking himself to get this show going and on the road and get cannabis just regulated somehow, people. Let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you to Blog Talk Radio, Growers House,
Accurate
Med Testing, Culture Magazine, azmarijuana.com, and Tumbleweeds Health Center and Studio C for always allowing us to host Wednesday, Wednesday, each and every week. 2 years, you guys. Thank you so much. Come get certified at Tumbleweeds Health Center, 5315 East Broadway Boulevard, Suite 103 in the back. $85 certification, $65 recertification. Come on down. Remember,
be smart,
be safe, and educate. Yay!